Hello everyone and welcome to the Constructive Criticism Network. This network is here to help you improve at Magic the Gathering at every level. From Pauper Leagues to Top 1000 Mythic, we've got you covered. If you want to hear the entire network, head on over to our sponsor at PureMTGO.com, where you can hear each and every show, each and every week, and check out their sponsor, MTGO Traders, and tell them that the CCMTG Network sent you. Now sit back, enjoy the show. From YouTube, podcasts, and more, here's this week's episode from ConstructiveCriticism.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 335th episode of Constructed Criticism. I'm your host, Mason, and I'm joined by my co-host, Allie. Allie, how you doing? We had a week off.
I'm doing a lot better now that I have a functioning computer, but...
Yeah, your computer kind of exploded, right? I didn't get all the details. Was it an old computer or just, you know, what happened?
Yeah, I mean, it was Dylan's old... desktop that he had let me use for the past couple months after he moved here, and I think it's just like the video card or something doesn't like to play video, so I couldn't have like my webcam working or my second monitor, and then the motherboard also was just done. So yeah, it was not having a good time.
So it's fair to say it's Dylan Hand's fault, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that seems like the appropriate response. Well, we had a week off. It was nice. We tried to get a guest host, but some things fell through. That's fine. Hopefully we can get them someday in the future. But for now, we've got a pretty interesting episode that, Allie, you know, you kind of pitched to do. So I'm excited to talk about explore territory, you know, things that we've already gone over. But first, Allie, we have to do Always Improving. What was your Always Improving moment in these last 2 weeks?
Taking time to relax and do something else, really. Like, I know a lot of people have been kind of like burnt out on Companions or burnt out on Standard or a specific format or just Magic in general. And I think if you get to like that point, pushing yourself to keep playing Magic is just going to end up being harmful, like for your mental health, harmful for your actual gameplay, and like you're not going to actually improve. So taking some time to just like not play Magic can actually be a way how you improve, because you're not going to be improving if you're burnt out or frustrated with how things are lately. So just like, yeah, taking a step back at some point so then you can like come back to the game refreshed and excited. I mean, like, I didn't have my computer, so like maybe that was
yeah, I think that's, you know, like, it's hard to practice and play Magic, especially nowadays, without a computer, right? Like, it's a good break. And I think what you said is so true, though, right? Like, if you're just ramming your head against the wall, and you don't even enjoy ramming your head against the wall, you know? It's not even, like, kind of fun. It's going to be a really miserable experience, and you're really going to get, like, close to nothing out of it. If anything, I think it actually, a lot of times what happens is people start to get burnt out, and they're like, no, I'm going to really commit to learning this Standard for this GP this weekend. And they, like, run themselves in the ground, and they start, like, forming negative thoughts and stuff about the format that maybe aren't true, or about play patterns or decks and stuff, you know, and they get, like, really sour on it because they don't like it, right? And they're like, the reason I don't like this is obviously this thing, you know? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I always love taking some time off. My Always Improving moment this week was exploring some things that are out of my comfort zone again. So, like, I normally, especially in Modern, I don't like to play reactive decks, like things like Jund, like the 80 card Gorion decks are just not where I want to be positionally in the format, Banned Snow. And with the Lotus Boxing coming up, plus just wanting to explore like Modern with Companions, I tried playing like Lurrus Jund, the Lurrus Field Jund deck, which is a weird one, and like Yorion Urza, and just kind of playing those decks and trying to, you know, check my biases kind of at the door and be like, okay, yes, like, it's probably better to be proactive a lot of the time, threats beat answers, but it's Modern, is Magic so different right now, especially Modern. I should definitely see, like, does always having access to a Lurrus change things, you know? Because it definitely did for aggro decks. Like, I played a lot of human Lurrus and found that to be quite powerful. So that was my always improving moment of the week, you know? Gotta stretch out sometimes and make sure we're not living in a bubble too much.
Always a fan of Jund, so you sold me a Jund.
Have you played much? I know that you've been streaming Jund a little bit since you got back, but have you played much of the Jund Lurrus decks?
Yeah, I've played a handful of it. I've been trying to... Something, like, happened with MTG Goldfish where I think they, like, got rid of Jund as a category because now it's just like Lurrus Jund, but I'm trying to find Jund lists that are just typical Jund playing Lurrus in the deck, because I think that is kind of what I'm missing with the deck, I suppose.
Sure.
Like sure, like companions are powerful, but I think like I'm getting to the point where like the matches that I am losing with Jund, it's definitely the matches that I suffer without Bloodbraid Elf or without Liliana of the Veil.
Yeah, that's true. Like we saw Boggles crush the what's it called, the PTQ this past weekend, you know. Liliana of the Veil is running around. That's a lot less likely to happen even with Lurrus. Although, I guess Lurrus does give you Liliana fodder always, which is kind of funny. I had not considered that until we started talking right now. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I might just play Burn this weekend, honestly.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards the Ryan Overturf's Prowess Burn deck or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's really weird. I think the games are actually, not to go off too far on tangent here, but I actually think the games are super fun with the Lurrus stuff. But it's very, very different Magic than what even I think was happening in the Gen decks before. And they're also all so much more efficient on mana and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I feel like my Gen opponents never have clunky draws, you know, where, like, sometimes you mulligan and you have two Bloodbraid Elves in your hand and you just don't quite have something to do on turn three, you know? And now they're like, my whole deck's two CMC or less. I'm always popping off. So,
yeah.
It's an interesting experience. All right, so now it's time for our Patreon question. If you want to support this show, you go to patreon.com/CCMTG and help support the show. And you get to ask a question like Adrian did this week. Adrian's question is, what do you look for when you're combing through tournament results? Are you looking for a spicy new list to come out of nowhere? Are you looking over every list to see how they're tinkered or interact with? Do you like to look at big tournament results? Do you like to look through just the deck dumps as well, like 5-0s? What is your process when looking through these things? You know, we kind of mentioned it a second ago with Jund, but Allie, do you want to take it away here?
I think this is a really good question, like specifically for our podcast too, because I know we've talked about wanting to kind of like look over tournament results for a lot of our episodes and kind of just explore formats and stuff. So I really like this question, and I think as with a lot of questions in life, unfortunately, the answer is it depends. I think for me, if I'm looking at something like standard, I'm actually like more interested in just seeing like new decks and maybe any like spicy deck lists. Mostly like in general I do like looking at bigger tournaments as opposed to like Moto League 5-0s and stuff, but yeah, like sometimes you can like benefit from that, I suppose. It kind of just like is whatever works for you, I feel like.
Yeah, it also kind of depends on like why I'm looking for stuff. Like, let's say I'm looking because I'm going to an SCG in a week, right? And I have like the week off between things and I'm trying to explore stuff. At the start of the first of the 2 weeks, I might just be looking for stuff that seems more interesting and kind of something that we haven't seen before and looking for potential. And a lot of times when you look through that kind of stuff, you're not going to find anything too special, but sometimes you do stumble across something that's like, oh wait, this like Niv-Mizzet deck looks kind of great, you know. It's like just playing a bunch of removal and using Niv-Mizzet to close the game. Maybe that's something, you know. And then like leading into maybe the week of the event, we're getting closer, I might be looking for more like minutia type stuff. Like, okay, I'm really gonna play Wurza, right? I'm gonna play the Wurza deck, and I'm just kind of looking for sideboard stuff and seeing how people are planning to approach. And like, you know, there's like maybe two or three slots every deck kind of has that kind of get tinkered with. Like a lot of times the core like 55 cards in the main deck are really established a lot. And so I'm looking for those extra five slots. And I'm also keeping my eye open for somebody making a big pivot. And does that pivot make sense? You know, when I'm looking for them, I'm not looking just to change just for the sake of changing, but I'm really looking for changing for the sake of this makes sense, you know?
I'm really glad you brought that point up too. I think when I'm unsure of what I'm going to play, I'm more likely to look at like big tournaments, like what's winning, what's doing well, what am I going to play against this week? Just based on like what's been doing well, what do I think people are going to bring? But then after I do decide a deck, like say in this like Lotus Box tournament, I'm going to play Lurrus Jund. then instead of looking at like some of the bigger tournaments, I might start looking at the like most recent 5-0s on Moto just to find those like last couple of sideboard pieces, seeing the newest thing that people are doing and trying, and then try that out myself.
Yeah, and I think another thing that this does that's very important is like it gives you an idea of what other people are doing too, right? So let's say like, you know, me and Allie are both looking for Lurrus Gen decks, and we're seeing they're all playing Grimflayer now, right? It's like, okay, maybe we don't agree with that Grimflayer choice, but then we're playing a game and we see our opponent has a weird card like, I don't know, like a Trial of Ambition, right? Or something like that. It's like, oh, they probably have Grimflayer in the deck. And now we have more information. And even more importantly, I think, you get to look at the other decks and see how they're sideboarding. And that's a big thing I look over. When I'm looking over deck lists before a tournament and I'm like working on a sideboard guide or working on building my sideboard, I look at other decks I think are popular and I look at what cards they're playing, right? So like if I'm playing a Lurrus Gen deck, maybe people's plan is to attack my graveyard, right? It's going to make my Lurrus bad. It's going to make my Tarmogoyfs worse. That's the thing that maybe, you know, I'm checking out. So maybe I'll try to look for a sideboard card if I see everyone doing that kind of thing that can maybe interact with that if I feel that's an axis I want to fight on. So that's an example of something else I'm looking at with deck lists is, okay, yes, my bubble really matters, but it also really matters what the rest of the world's doing, right? I can't just ignore these other decks. They all have plans. So that's it for me. That's it for that. It's hard though, right? Like looking over all these deck lists and like trying to come to conclusions. And also you kind of, you know, I'm not going to lie and say I spend hours looking over deck lists or anything like that. You know, like a lot of time you're doing a lot of like skimming or like control effing, you know, and it can be hard to stay on top of everything. So I think it's definitely something that it is kind of like a test, right, Allie? Like if you skip the test and you get a 0, the average on your test grades go down a lot, right? But if you go there and you put in like 70 or 80, maybe it wasn't the best in the world, but at least it helps towards that, right? And it becomes easier, too. You know, you get some practice, so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Adrian, for that. If you want to support the show, once again, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg, where you can go to our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can go to Oasis Games. They have all the cards you're looking for. They're going to have everything ready to ship out for Ikoria. I believe, it is this Friday Ikoria drops. So you can go there right now, get your cards pre-ordered, and they'll get to you very quickly. I always... Normally, like if I had a real life tournament, I order my cards like today and they get here by Thursday. And, you know, that's not like getting overnight ship or anything. That's just they're on top of it and they, you know, send out very quickly. So go to Oasis Games, use code CCMTG for 4% off every order, and code Would That Be Good for 15% off your first order. That way they know we sent you. Allie, are you excited to talk about this main topic? Because this is like your kind of brainchild. So I'd love to hear about what you think about revisiting old decks and ideas.
I'm actually really excited you wanted to talk about this week because I'm starting to like formulate and write an article about it as well. And yeah, it's just like something that I think a lot of people don't think about or even talk about in any capacity is the idea of revisiting these old decks or different like strategies, archetypes after kind of like a format is maybe not like solved but is so far away from that one deck that like it's just like not a consideration anymore. And I ended up thinking about this for the first time actually when it was like the end of the last standard, so right before Ikoria released, I started playing Jund Sacrifice on the ladder and just like couldn't lose with it because the best deck at the time was Bant Ramp. That's all I played against, and I like sprung from like the bottom of gold to like diamond just like with this deck. I'm like, what is going on? This like isn't a deck anymore.
Yeah, people decide this is bad, Allie. Why are you trying to buck the norm? Get in line. Yeah, it's very interesting, and I think it's important to do this thing and check it, right? And it's kind of like what we alluded to earlier in the show when talking about like looking over deck lists. And we're not looking for these old things just to be different, but checking them out to see what's there before could become really powerful in the current metagame because things change, right? Like the reason that maybe Jund Food wasn't so good before at the start of the format is because Team of Reclamation and some other decks are around, and that made it really hard to play Jund Food, right? And then when those decks leave the format, if you're not looking back and being like, wait, why did we stop playing that like insane Jund deck that like dominated a format before and got some new cards? It's like, oh, well, you can't play that because of Wilderness Reclamation. It's like, wait, who's playing Wilderness Reclamation? You know? And so kind of checking those biases is so important. And I heard a story from a friend about another game that was just like this I thought was great to incorporate into this. So I haven't played much Counter-Strike, but I started playing Valorant. And my friend Michael Hinderacher, he was telling me about how in Counter-Strike, they hadn't had a patch in a really long time, right? And there was kind of this established meta alley where you all, like, you bought this kind of gun, did this kind of thing. And then one streamer decided, I'm going to start playing with the AUG. And they found out that this gun, the AUG, was, like, actually insane on all metrics. And it totally changed everything. But people had decided you couldn't play the AUG because of this other gun that was happening, right? And so it's just a perfect example of the metagame. It's like, wait, why are we establishing these rules on ourselves that aren't there, right? We do this thing as Magic players where we impose rules that aren't real, and then we decide that because these rules have happened or these things have happened, we can't go back and check things because, oh, we've already established this thing happens.
Yeah, I think it's, like, super pronounced in the past couple standards, too. Like, these... Like, a new deck appears, and then it's suddenly just, like, the format then incorporates this new deck plus, like, Bant Ramp and Jeskai Fires, and that's, like, the format. That's the established format until some of these other decks, like, fall off, and they just, like, end up being forgotten about. Like, to some extent, these decks never, like, really pop back, and Standard feels, like, pretty, like, cyclical and changes a lot based on who's presenting a new deck, like, what weird, wacky combo with Agent of Treachery did people find? And, yeah, so, I mean, like, with this standard, Nick Prince just wrote an article about Golgari Adventures, mostly, like, the same list that I played in MC7, and just, like, updated with new cards, and I started playing it on stream today, and, like, I was beating a lot of the Agent of Treachery decks, so.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, at what point do you, I don't know, like, try and just bring back a different deck that is just completely fallen out of the meta for, like, months?
Yeah, it's really hard to know when, too, and I definitely had moments before where I'm like, wait, what did that, like, mono white deck that Canister played at, like, an MC look like, right? Or whatever. You know, I'm just like, wait, wouldn't that be really good right now? And you go and you look up the old deck list, you know, and you can, like, try to port it to Standard. And sometimes those things, they lead to big results. Even if it's just, like, okay, the deck's, like, finally positioned in the format, people not having sideboard plans for you and not having cards that matter is a huge step up, especially if you have cards that matter, right? Like, if you're playing a mono white aggressive deck and your deck has like four Hushbringers, right? Well, then the Agent of Treachery decks might not be, you know, prepared for that kind of game plan. So, but how have you found, like, the time to go back and look at these things? Are you looking for, like, stale meta games when a deck isn't, like, vibing with you? Like, what is the kind of the things that's off in your head to look backwards, like the alarm? Because I do think sometimes, you know, you don't want to default to always looking back, right? So how do you, like, move forward with it?
Yeah, I think the first time actually happened completely on accident. Like, what was it? Like, Bant made its breakout as the best deck after the MC, or no, after the Magic Fest Online that Andrei Strosky won with Bant, and I also top-8ed that one with Recto Sacrifice. So immediately after that, like, I could not win anything with Recto Sacrifice because just, like, Bant had completely tailored their entire plan to beating Recto Sacrifice because it was kind of the only other deck, really. And I was just, like, at a loss of, like, well, how can I do this and beat Bant? And then just, yeah, for some reason, I'm like, well, it gets to a point where we just, like, run out of things to do. We run out of card advantage and can't kind of come back after a board wipe. So I was like, okay, well, what happens? Like, whatever happened to, like, Jund? Like, Jund had a lot of card advantage, like, Trail of Crumbs, Korvold, just, like, a Gilded Goose, a bunch of stuff like that. And so I'm like, all right, like, dug up some pass lists, tried to add new cards as well that are like just like tune it, try and make it beat Bant, and it did.
Yeah, it is crazy though, right? How, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think it's almost like a, for lack of a better term, like laziness, right? Like, I go to my like Twitter, or I listen to my podcast, you know, and like it's, we at the time too, you know, you mentioned Jund, I think the week of, maybe the week after the last MFO for that format, or the last week of that format. But like, you know, people say like, oh, I'm supposed to play these decks, I'm supposed to do these things. What kind of stops people from going back in your mind? Because in my mind, it seems like it's kind of the same thing with sideboard guides, right? It's like, all right, like, I like to play humans, so I'm going to subscribe to Dylan Hand's Patreon because, you know, he's going to put a lot of work in on humans, and I just don't have the time right now to explore this kind of stuff. Do you think it's kind of like that, or what do you think it is? Do you think it's like, we've decided this, so this is the way things are now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like a mix of a lot of things, like what you were saying, as well as like when you start seeing decks fall out of favor, so you're just like not seeing the results anymore. So why would someone want to go back and play a deck that hasn't had any good finishes for months, like even to try it, when you can just play whatever the new fun flashy deck that Crokey's just brewed or something?
Yeah, I was gonna mention Crokey's. I'm glad you mentioned him. Yeah, it seems like he comes in and he makes declarative statements, right? Like, this is the best deck. And he plays enough, and we've all kind of just trusted Crokey's, right? We've all just decided that that's the thing we're going to do. And he also approaches deck building in such, like, a weird way that, like, catches our eyes a lot of the time. Like, Arena Decklist did a whole episode last week about how Crokey's was building decks way better than they had been doing it for, like, the last 3 months, you know? It's because he has, like, this different approach. So if you want to hear more about that, go check them out. Their podcast is great. But either way, like, that is, I think, a very interesting thing you mentioned. Do you think that, like, I hate to use the term influencer, but do you think, like, influencers, like, I think they have a huge say in the meta, and that's, I'm just going to not try and lead you. I'm just going to make my statement. I think people like Crokey's, when they tweet out deck lists, it affects ladder and things like that drastically. And I expect, like, the same thing. Like, if VTCLA Baker tweets a deck list, I expect standard MTGO leagues to, like, have that deck a lot. Do you think that's, like, a real thing, or do you think that's maybe me just having biases?
No, I think that's completely true. I mean, there's literally decks that did not exist before, like, Crokey's would stream it or put it on Twitter or whatever. Along with that, even if you're not into more of the, like, new, like, brewing kind of, like, decks, you still just, like, look at the Magic Fest online. Like, you see like, Brad Nelson and Seth Manfield and Gabe Nassif and just, like, literally, like, all these professional Magic players continuing to play the same decks every week, or, like, the same, like, two or three decks every week. And so, like, you're seeing these players that are just, like, great players. You're like, oh, well, like, if they're doing that has to be correct. So if they're not going back and exploring different strategies or stuff, like why should I or whatever?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So so we kind of talked about, like, why these things happen. Let's try to identify the times when we should be going forward and going about doing this, and, like, the process of actually doing it. And so we used your Bant example earlier to kind of frame it, but let's kind of look at right now, right, and see if maybe now is the time to move forward with things and use the current standard as an example. So current standard, right, is kind of like, we got Luka decks. We have a bunch of Agent Treachery decks, really. All the decks are, like, trying to build towards Agent Treachery, but you have, like, Luka to do it. You have, like, Bant trying to do it. And then you have, like, you know, Fire, like, Fires as an enabler for some of those decks, right? And then you have, I don't think there are any other real decks right now, right? There's the Reclamation deck and the Cycling deck. So our kind of pillars of the format are Agent decks, Cycling decks, and these Team Reclamation decks. So when we think about those things, Allie, what kind of jumps to your mind right away as, like, maybe something to do? Like, what's, like, an older deck? Is there anything coming to you, or?
So, I mean, my first thought thinking of this current standard, which I'd written an article about last week, was, like, well, I really want to beat, Yorion / Agent of Treachery decks, and how do I do that? So, like, I started from a point of just, like, how do we beat those decks? And I ended up going in, like, directions of pretty much established decks already. But then, I mean, like Nick Prince kind of, like, took the same idea and went in a different direction of exploring an old deck, which was Golgari Adventures, of just, like, identifying how good, say, like, Casualties of War is against these decks and how good ramping that out is. So,
you kind of identified... You're good. So you kind of, like, identified, like, okay, all these decks are doing things that Casualties of War are really strong against, right? Like, they're all trying to put a lot of mana in. Maybe they're trying to stick, like, a permanent or two. I'm sorry, a creature permanent or two. And they all have, like, an enchantment, right? Like, every one of those decks has an enchantment. And then even some of the fringier decks all have artifacts, right? Like, there's the Temur Clover deck, which, you know, won the GP this last weekend. But, like, so that deck has, like, a couple little things that can blow up. And so Nick kind of identified, like, okay, everyone's trying to do the same thing. What can I do that interacts with all of those things? And what is, like, a positive thing to do that, right? And you think of the card Casualties of War. It's like, okay, Casualties blows up all these things. They need their man to set back, or they're going to be set so far back, right? That's actually one of the most punched things about Agent Treachery, is when you get your first one out, is you set them back on mana if they don't have, like, some insane spell. And it's like, okay, so I want to do that. Then I also want to be aggressive because I need to put a clock on all of these decks, right? So green-black starting to look like the type of thing. It's like, okay, and I also want to try and avoid Elspeth Conqueror's Death because that's a card that's, like, really impactful and a catch-up mechanic for a lot of these decks, where I want to make sure that, like, I punish the fact that they're not getting on board for Zenith Flare or Temur Wreck. And so I think Nick did, like, a really great job of identifying, like, okay, this is kind of, like, the perfect storm to bring back this deck that, you know, we saw have a spike of popularity at MC7. That was the MC you were at, correct?
Yeah.
All right, so we had MC7. You know, we saw Ally Warfield top 16 with it. We saw Autumn playing it. We saw someone else playing it too. Sorry for the other person. And, you know, then the deck, some stuff happened and changed. But now it's kind of like the time again. And I think that deck really should be getting explored, because I saw Nick post that thing and I played it. And I was like, wow, this is, like, actually makes a lot of sense and seems really powerful.
Yeah, so, definitely. Even, like, you mentioned, just, like, the Magic Fest Online, the Temur Clover deck, like, sure, that was, like, a popular deck last standard, but for this standard, like, I really haven't seen any of it. So, like, that kind of takes our idea, too, of, like, that deck had fallen out of favor, and someone had identified that just kind of, like, these synergies around Lucky Clover, or even, like, card advantage, playing a lot of creatures, like, all of that culminating together is pretty good against Agent of Treachery.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we all agree that if we're doing one really big thing a turn, Agent of Treachery is gonna win, right? But the Lucky Clover deck, like you just mentioned, is like, okay, but I'm gonna do, like, four pretty big things. Like, I'm gonna make a bunch of these things, or stomp a bunch of your stuff, run some of a bunch of things, or Fey of Wishes for, like, a couple cards. And I'm going to, like, make this game matter in a different way. And I think that's, like you just said, is another great example of that. I'm kind of thinking right now, and we've seen this actually happen a little bit this week, so it's a little disingenuous, but the mono-red decks of old, like the one Seth Manfield played at Worlds, are also really good against these kind of decks, right? And we've seen the Obosh red deck that's just, like, 16 one-drops, some shocks, annexes, Phoenix, and Light at the Stage, and Obosh, and that's the deck, and I'm just going to attack you. And that's, like, another great example, right, of, like, okay, if we all agree that the format's about making big plays and stopping them with Agent of Treachery, I'm going to make a bunch of small plays, right? And I hope what this is kind of helping the listeners when they're hearing this is not so much, like, okay, this is, like, what's happening now, I should like, copy what they're saying. It's explaining kind of the thought process behind it, right? And I think that's the part that gets lost in communication a lot of times when it comes to content. So
yeah, I mean, it's, like, a really hard topic to, like, think about or even talk about, because it's like, well, when are we going to do this? When is this a good or bad idea? How do we even do this? And how do we even, like, talk about this to describe this as a concept in general?
Yeah. yeah, it really is hard though, right? Like, even when I was like outlining the show, it's kind of hard to talk about this without using an example of like a current format, right? Or coming up with hypotheticals, and then honestly just talking through the process and kind of hoping that listeners can apply that sort of thought process to their own games and into future environments, right? You could try to do something like that with modern and other formats too, but basically the gist of it is like figuring out like what the points that the format is playing on, and then trying to, like, for lack of a better term, like knock those points off, right? Like try to do something totally just different.
I definitely think utilizing like this technique or just like revisiting old decks is generally really good when we're looking at formats with smaller formats with like less decks.
Yeah.
So like at the end of last standard, it was literally you play Rakdos Sacrifice, you play Jeskai Fires, or you play Bant Ramp, and that was kind of it. If this standard gets to the point where it's like everyone is literally only playing like Bant, Yorion, and Alucca deck, which like it feels like maybe it's almost there, then maybe it's time to actually like do this and look at these other decks. But like some of the liabilities of that, if you're trying to do this in like a bigger format, is these decks kind of got pushed out for a reason, and you're more likely to play against a deck that pushed your deck out of the format if the format is like bigger. So that a consideration there.
Yeah, I think that's huge. Like the bigger the format gets, and the kind of like the, you kind of hit it there on the head there, like, okay, you kind of can only do what we're talking about once a format starts to like congeal and slow down, right? Like you can't do this like day one of standard, right? Like, okay, everyone's playing this weird cycling deck with the big red enchantment. I should go back to this thing, right? There's just too much going on. But once people all start to, for lack of a better term, kind of get in line and agree with what's going on, then it's much easier to attack things, right? Like when you have smaller, narrower things like you talked about. And one of the problems with the older formats is some people just don't care. Some people just want to play Boggles, and that's the deck they're going to play, and they want to tinker with Boggles, and that's totally fine, but it makes it a lot harder to like attack a modern metagame when some people are like, listen, I'm only showing up with Boggles or Karn Liberated. That's it. That's my life. You know, I love doing it. Can't stop me. And it's like, okay, well, none of these decks I built will ever beat either of those decks, so I'm in trouble. But
yeah, I definitely think this is the hardest thing to do in Modern, because, mm-hmm. I mean, the people's format, people are going to play literally whatever they want, which, like, you might think they might do this in, like, Legacy too, and, like, to some extent that exists, but, like, I don't know. Legacy and Modern are so different to me, where, like, I feel like a lot of the time in Legacy you can actually metagame, because even if people do play, like, their pet decks or whatever, like, it still kind of falls within an actual, like, archetype theme, metagame, etc. Whereas, like, Modern, you can play anything from Boggles to Mill to Valakut to Tron, and it's just, like, nothing is ever the same. And even in like Hogax Summer, I still played against people not playing Hogax. So,
have I told you my experience in Hogax Summer? I think I've told this on the podcast once before, but basically, I played four major events. I played like three SCGs and a GP in a 5-week period, and I played against Hogax four times. I'm sorry, it was three times. One of those times was before the tournament, so I'm sorry to forget it. But well, actually, one of them was Nick Prince, and he was the only person I played at GP Vegas playing Hogax, and it was like, wait, we all know like this deck's broken. What are we doing? You know, and it was just this wild experience. And it's this thing too, where sometimes people just don't believe it. You know, like SCG Philly, everyone was like, Arclight Phoenix beats this Hogax deck. Like, it's not actually a problem. And then you saw like a lot of SCG grinders playing Arclight Phoenix. My team played two Arclight Phoenixes. We saw like the team Amulet playing Triple Phoenix as their team. You know, there was just a bunch of Arclight, and people just decide like, nah, this isn't a thing. So everyone really has to be on the same page to do what we're talking about, or otherwise this plan just doesn't work, you know? And so I wonder if it's even possible to do it in Pioneer, you know? It feels like it's almost too open as well, right? Like, Legacy has this weird thing where it has, like, restricting points on the format, like Days, Force of Will, Chalice of the Void, those kind of things are going to make it so you can't actually do too many crazy things along with combo decks that are really insane. And so it's like, all right, well, we kind of are actually limited in our card pool, but Modern doesn't have those same restrictions, and Pioneer definitely doesn't have those outside of Inverter or Breach. So it's like, it becomes really hard to actually do this in those formats. In a weird way, Legacy is like the second smallest card pool. So, yeah, it's kind of wild to think about.
I will say that I do think if it is possible in Modern, it would probably be along the lines of right now. Like, I think everyone is pretty much playing a Lurrus deck or something similar. And, I mean, like, we saw it in the PTQ this last week of Boggles winning. And I think that is, like, obviously there are some people who just love Boggles and are going to play it anyway. But if you're specifically, like, going back and looking at Modern results and you're seeing, like, oh, like, it's just like a ton of like Lurrus Jund or Death Shadow or Lurrus Burn. Like, you can go back and look, which deck can capitalize on these two decks being probably the majority of what I'm going to play in this tournament?
Yeah, that's a great, great point. I think the person, I saw their tweet, they basically said, like, it looked like this was the weekend to play Boggles, you know? And so they chose it and they were rewarded, right? And these kind of things they really do lead to huge rewards. And that's why it's so important to talk about, like, exploring this already explored territory and just double checking our work, kind of. But there is something that I think is important for us to talk about that we'd be disingenuous to not talk about, and we've alluded to a little bit. And that's knowing when to give up and not kind of dying on this creative hill, right? There are going to just be times where there might not be the tools, unfortunately, or there might be too many different choke points in the format that make it so your tools aren't really doable. And you need to know, like, okay, you know, Mason Alley told me that I'm supposed to look back at these things, and there just might not be something there to answer it. And I would say this is especially true in higher power small formats. So, like, Legacy is a great example, right? When we talk about, like, in Legacy, you could probably do this, but because the cards are so powerful, you're going to need to be doing something very similar or also incredibly powerful along these lines in order to actually make a real dent in the format. And so there's definitely this love. I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, sometimes it's not fun just to play the mirrors over and over and over again. Maybe a particular mirror isn't fun and, you know, you want to do something different, but we need to know not to die on this hill, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a ton of old decks that, like, you can always, like, go back and explore. I'm thinking kind of just, like, in the frame of Standard right now, because I think this topic resonates with Standard the best. And I mean, like, even if we're looking at, like, last format where I identified that, like, Jund Sacrifice was actually, like, really good, there was still, like, a ton of decks that I could have done the same thing to. Like, maybe I, like, thought about it and I was like, you know what's, like, really good is that old Is It Flash deck. And I try that out and I'm just, like, not winning. It's not getting there. Maybe, like theoretically it makes sense to me, but that's just, like, not how it's playing out. Like, it's okay to just kind of, like, not, like, give up, really, but just, like, accept the realities of the format, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's giving up implies that, like, this is the only way to do things, right? It's just kind of like, okay, this is just a thing that doesn't work right now, and that's okay, you know? We did the work, kind of, you know?
Also, like, if you have the ability to, like, I know, like, sometimes, like, decks sometimes don't really click with me, or I don't know how to play a deck, like, 100%. So I actually, like, gave the Jund list to a handful of other people, too. Of just like, hey, like, I think this deck conceptually is really good in the format right now. And it got, like, 3 people to Mythic. I'm like, all right, I feel a little better now that, like, I was probably, like, correct about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's huge. Well, Ali, is there anything else you want to say on this before we wrap up here?
I think in general, like, Arena makes this whole concept pretty easy to do, because, I don't know, if you have a pretty stocked Arena account, you can kind of just, like, flip back to, like, old decks you've had anyway, so...
Yeah, I think that's actually probably a great point to mention. Ali, do you delete all of your decks, or do you keep them?
I have been deleting them, just to, like, free up space. I do, like, every time a new set comes out, but, like, I'm kind of thinking, like, maybe I shouldn't just maybe, like, keep, like, one or two of the old decks. Like, maybe this can, like, stick around for a little bit.
Yeah, I used to definitely do that thing where I just deleted all of them, but I got kind of lazy in the last one. I didn't, and a couple of times now I've been like, wait, like, wasn't that Rakdos Sacrifice deck really good and, like, kind of fast and aggressive? And so, like, I took that and just changed some cards, worked a companion in, you know, it's just Gigantha, nothing crazy, but it's like, okay, I have that kind of shell, and it's an easy point of reference, and it's, like, right there, just like you talked about, right? Like, it's like, click, 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 all right, let's play, you know, and let's try this thing out. And also, everyone's working kind of towards the same goal of, like, having a chance to qualify towards the PT, so they have some incentive to actually play well, right? There's no, like, oh, we're just playing for the sake of playing. They're going to try and beat you. And you get to jump in there and see what it's like and get the experience. So, yeah, I think that's huge. So, all right. Well, if you want to find us, you can go to twitch.tv/TheMasonClark to find my Twitch. And you can go to Mason E. Clark on twitter.com. Ali, if someone wants to find you, where can they go?
You can find me on the website, otherwise known as twitter.com, and find me at Mythic Meebo, or you can watch my stream at twitch.tv/mythic_meebo.
Ali, you mentioned you wrote articles. If someone wants to see the companion piece sort of this, to see the article version, where could they go to see that?
Yeah, I write for TCG Player, so you can hop on over there and find a handful of articles I've already written, and my articles come out on Saturday, so keep your eyes peeled.
Awesome. Well, until next week.